Welcome, everyone, to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Before I get started, I want to remind you that there are some new books that released today. My friend Alifair Burke's new book, The Better Sister, is out. Stephanie Ivanovich, Under the Table, is out today. She'll be on my show next week. Vanessa Fewings, who also hosts the Romance Show podcast in this network, released her new book, Pervade London. She'll be with me Monday. Brenda Marguerite, who was with me not too long ago, re-released one of her books called Reserve for You. It looks so delish. And another book that is out is Heather Gudenkauf's book, Before She Was Found. Heather's gotten rave reviews everywhere. If you want to find out more, go to newinbooks.com. They're a great place to find new books. You can go on my Facebook page or on the show Facebook page. Today has been a day of really incredible women writers. I spoke to a woman who wrote a memoir earlier, Barbara Skoblik. I spoke to New York Times bestselling author Karen White about Southern literature. And now joining me is a woman who grew up in what seems to be a very privileged lifestyle, only to find out that life in Brazil, São Paulo, Brazil, was not quite what she thought. Karen Kelt was born and raised in Brazil to a Brazilian father and an American mother. She started riding horses at a very young age, started competing at 9. She attended university. However, in 1979, her life changed drastically. It is my honor and my privilege to introduce to you Karen Kelt, with her new book, a memoir called The Parrot's Perch. Karen, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for coming here to tell your story.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Pam. I appreciate the opportunity very much.
It's my pleasure. I'm all about promoting women writers, and you have a very sometimes heartwarming, other times earth-shattering, but a very empowering memoir in The Parrot's Perch. I want to start by talking about being born and raised in São Paulo, Brazil. This is quite a few years ago. It is not like it is now. Would you tell us what life was like?
Yeah. And it was quite a few years ago. I was born there in 1953. It was a very male-dominated society. It still is, although there is now, and there was no middle class pretty much during the time I was growing up. It was the very, very poor or the very, very wealthy with very few in between. That has changed quite a bit in Brazil. Women have wonderful jobs and careers. What hasn't changed in Brazil is the male domination, not just of the country and the government, but of society. Women are trying very much to change. The whole culture of rape and crime against women was something that was really horrific. When I was a teenager, we would hear stories on the news of, you know, let's say a guy who killed his wife because she didn't have his dinner ready on time, or his beer wasn't cold enough, and these cases were never prosecuted. And today that wouldn't happen, but crimes against women, rape, things like that are still very prevalent, and it's a society that is changing a very, very long time to reach any kind of equality for women.
Interesting. You know, you and I are in the same generation, so I can tell you that I understand where you're coming from, and I agree with you. It seems like we made some progress, but it seems like now we're going backwards, even in today's day and age.
It's so interesting to me because I've seen since I came to the United States, I've seen a tremendous change. And it's interesting to me because many women here in the States don't see any change at all, or they see what you've seen, which is it sort of going back and forth. For me, it was a total breath of fresh air because we were kind of, I was at the time when I came very much responsible for myself, and that led to a whole series of new ways that I looked at life. But yeah, today women, you know, can get the ultimate job. Pay still isn't equal, and we still have a lot of issues, of course, with sexual abuse. But I do see it changing, and I hope in a more positive way today.
Yeah, it's a lot of pushback still, but you're right. Totally. There are some very positive changes. What happened that made you leave São Paulo, Brazil? Let's just get right to the heart of the matter.
Let's
because
get right to it.
This is what your story is about, and it's a harrowing, heart-wrenching story. Will you tell listeners, please?
Yes. So, take a deep breath here. In 1973, I got engaged to an American, a young American by the name of Henry Sage, whose grandfather had actually been a New York State senator. And then we dated, as was customary, for a while. And in 1976, we had our big wedding ceremony in São Paulo, Brazil, in January, on my 23rd birthday. And 4 months later, in May, we were awakened in the middle of the night by men that at that present moment we believed were criminals, bandits, robbers. A lot of crime happened in Brazil at that time. Kidnapping was very prevalent, and Americans were often targeted because they, you know, seemed and often had more money. So that's what we thought was happening. And as it turned out, we were actually taken by criminals, but they were police. And we were held in a dungeon prison without ever being charged of any crime. And during that time, we were both raped, beaten, and tortured. And for 45 days until our family was able to raise a very large ransom. And, you know, obviously it was, I almost speak about it today like it was a broken bone or a broken arm or something, which it certainly was not. But I've had, you know, as I say, I've had 40 years to recover from the wounds, and for many years I would say I didn't even know that I was carrying wounds around because I kept everything buried so deeply. And so once we were released, both my husband and I, you know, we were released on, ironically, on July 4th of 1976. We had a very difficult time reconnecting, and I don't think we even knew who we were, and our marriage basically fell apart. And in Brazil at the time, women were not allowed to get a divorce. Divorce was illegal, and women were not allowed to travel without their husband's permission. And I had gone to my parents when I realized that the marriage was just not sustainable, and asked them for help to, you know, help me move to the States or do something to get away. And at that time, also, the Brazilian government passed a law which gave amnesty from prosecution to its torturers. So having just experiencing the absolute worst that, you know, could happen in Brazil for 45 days, I knew I couldn't live there. And at this time, I also had, it was early 1979 now, I also had an 18-month-old son. It was getting pregnant was one of the things that I had done in an attempt to save my marriage, because I had been not necessarily coached, but I had been encouraged by my family and friends to live as normal a life as possible. And for me, that meant having a family, raising a family, and being a good wife. And unfortunately, that tactic did not work out. And when my father forbade me from leaving the marriage and the country, I had to run away. So I had to falsify a document saying that my husband gave me permission to travel, and I fled to the United States in February of 1979.
Did you take your son with you?
I did. That was the document that I falsified.
So I want to make a couple comments. And first of all, I honor you for telling your story, Karen. What an awful, horrible thing, not only for a man to do, or an army or military or police to do, but a government to condone. It is shameful. You know, having spent 20-odd years as a victim advocate after my own battle with crime, being a crime victim, I have learned, and you said, you know, it wasn't broken bones or anything like that. Of course not. The old saw, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me, is so totally not true. Mm-hmm. You recover from the physical wounds, the mental and emotional wounds, if not treated and treated well, will last forever.
Absolutely.
I don't know, but I want to know how you came here and started a new life without completely falling apart. How did you do that?
Well, I did sort of fall apart.
I'm sure you did several times.
Yes,
sure.
definitely had those moments. And I think for me, the moment my son was born, I had been in a complete state of depression practically throughout my pregnancy and from the time we were released. But again, and I don't know if it was a generational thing, but we as women were encouraged, number one, just put it behind you.
Right.
You know, sit up straight and put it in the past. Behave like you're supposed to, and don't talk about it. And don't talk about it was the big one. Because today, obviously, I've learned that talking is healing.
Absolutely.
But I never spoke
about it. By the way, were you pregnant when this happened to you?
No, I got pregnant 6
after you released.
7 months after. Yep.
Okay.
After we were released.
Who did you come to the States with, and where did you go?
I totally came by myself with my son, and I went to New York because my mom had family there. But I was in sort of hiding. So nobody could know where I was, because my biggest fear was that my husband or others would come back and get me. And at the very best, they would take my son. You know, the least thing, they would take my son, and the very worst thing that they could have possibly done is put me back in prison. So nobody could know where I was, and I didn't tell anyone in my family for 2 years.
Your husband did not know that you were escaping and did not encourage you to?
No.
Wasn't he an American also?
Yes. He unfortunately, you know, had as difficult a time as I did. And unfortunately, he resorted to other things to get his mind off his pain. You know, I won't necessarily go into what happened, but our marriage basically fell apart.
Sure.
And he would never have permitted me to leave Brazil in a million years.
With the torture that he went through, he didn't feel it was right for you and your child to go?
No.
Mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, the most important thing to realize there is that he and I were never able to talk about what had happened. We never talked about it. I never talked about it to anyone, my parents, friends, no one. We absolutely...
You just were not, you were forbidden, yeah.
We were forbidden from talking about it. We just kept quiet.
When you went to New York, your mom had family there and that's where you went. Did they know what had happened to you?
No, they didn't even know I was there. I went there because I felt at least I have a connection. If there's an emergency, I will be able to reach out if I really need something. But
were you homeless?
No, I had a little bit of money that I had, you know, taken from our account before I left. And I had enough money to get us to the States, and I had enough money to stay in Howard Johnson Hotel, which was totally the opposite of anything I'd ever done when I'd traveled. And at that point, I think I realized how, you know, really spoiled and privileged I had been. Anytime I'd ever been to New York before, we'd stayed at the Plaza. Or the Gramercy Park, or out on Long Island in the Hamptons, and so this was completely different, and I knew I had to be responsible, but I had no idea. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea what I expected. I just knew that I had to get myself and my son away from that situation. And obviously, when reality hit, I then realized I didn't want to live in New York. I couldn't tell anybody anyway, and so I moved to California within a month of arriving. And I moved to California, and I started working as a waitress and a cocktail waitress and a maid. And we lived in a couple of really terrible places with roommates in the beginning, and then got our own place, which was a small apartment in a migrant workers apartment complex in Encinitas, California, and then things sort of started improving for me once we made that move.
But you know, you lived, and that's your will was so strong. Even if you didn't know, even if it was just because you were a mom, not because of saving yourself.
Right.
It is amazing. I want to not tell the entire story, but I do want to fast forward a little bit. You went before a tribunal to tell your story, did you not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, when did this happen?
Brazil held something called the Brazilian National Truth Commission, where they decided to investigate crimes, human rights abuses and crimes that had been taking place from 1965 until 1985. And they asked me to give my testimony. And so I did. And I went to New York and I did have my interview with the head of the investigative committee. And Brazil then compiled a report for the government where they asked that the law be overturned and where they asked that the 2,000 people who gave their depositions like mine at the very least receive an apology from the government. And unfortunately, the government never did anything. To date, they've never done anything about it. Brazil is so corrupt right now. It's got so many political issues and problems that they're incapable of reaching something that would help fix this situation in Brazil. I think their economy is, you know, the bigger problem right now and current things that are happening, though. Torture, they say it doesn't happen anymore, but it does every day. You can pick up a Brazilian newspaper any day of the week and read stories like mine.
I want to ask you, first of all, how are you doing today? because you have become a writer of some note. You also are an amateur photographer, and you still ride horses, and you are remarried.
Yes,
are you pushing forward with your life?
I definitely am. The real aha, and I've been married for 33 years. And
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. The aha moment came for me in a yoga class where my teacher, who is one of the most remarkable women I've ever met, her name is Carolyn Pelletier, she was talking about forgiveness. And in that moment, in that yoga class, when she was talking about forgiveness, I realized that I'd been holding everything inside. It was just buried. I never opened
right.
the box. I never talked about it. And I tried not to let it affect me. But she said that there would never be any change in my life unless she wasn't talking to me, to the class, in our
right.
lives, unless we were able to forgive any wrongdoings. And that was my gosh, that was
yeah.
my moment that I realized.
Do you know that happened to, it happened to me too, Karen,
yeah.
when I was seeing a shrink after I was stabbed. I said, these are the things that are happening in my life. And he said, why don't you just forgive yourself? And it was, like you said, the aha moment.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean forgive myself? And he said, yeah, just forgive yourself. He said, you're not perfect. He said,
yeah.
I said, how do I do that? He said, just forgive your little self, your little girl self and your adult self.
Yeah.
And he said, learn to forgive because it's like acid burning in your stomach.
Exactly.
It is the most cathartic thing I ever heard through 2 years of counseling with him. When he said that, it was like the veil lifted. So I'm so glad that you got that, and I'm sorry that you got it late, but I'm glad that you got it, because that's really critical, isn't it?
It was absolutely critical for me to realize that I was still holding on to anger, to all those emotions.
Of course.
That, you know, why
How
me,
could you not?
All that stuff. Until
when would
I
you have let
said,
it go? Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's remarkable the power of that one thing, how it can change your life.
Oh, it absolutely is. I agree with you. I truly believe that people who walk around saying, I'll never forgive,
yep.
are some of the most unhappy people I know. It's just really sad. You know, you have to just move on. Because you say you forgive doesn't mean you say, let's go back and be friends again, or let's give
exactly.
it another shot. It has nothing to do with that. Forgiveness is for the forgiver.
Absolutely.
I mean, it really is. Yeah, yeah. Tell me a little bit about your writing, because you do a lot of different types of writing. When did that start for you?
Well, believe it or not, writing started for me in high school. It was something that I always really enjoyed and never thought of as a career, you know, but it was just something that I really felt comfortable doing. It was where I could write stuff down that possibly nobody would ever see, and that had meaning for me. And but I loved it. I always loved it. And then later, right after I was married, I got a job as an executive director for Chamber of Commerce in South Carolina, and
mm-hmm.
I had to write tons of reports and boring things. But then they asked me to write a newspaper column. And I loved that. It was just a little community newspaper column about what was going on and who was doing what. It was, you know, a gossipy, fun,
right.
touristy
sure.
thing, and I loved it. And I had always told myself that I wished I had the ability to write more. But, you know, work, family, marriage,
sure.
all those things didn't give me time. And thankfully, after, you know, we had moved out to Arizona where we live today, I found that I did have the time. And after that amazing yoga class, I said, okay, I'm doing it. And
good
that's
for
what,
you.
That's what I did.
Good for
and,
you.
And
I'm
also,
so glad.
You know, I'll tell you, the biggest motivator for me really was because after the Truth Commission and the Brazilian government didn't do anything. I was appalled that nobody, if I talk to anybody today, if I meet a new friend or a person and I say, you know, I grew up in Brazil, they'll immediately say, oh, carnival, those beautiful women, the beaches, the samba. But nobody knows about the crime. Nobody knows about the torture. And I decided this is something people need to know about.
Need to know. Speaking out is also very empowering, isn't it?
It is. It is very, very empowering.
I'm so happy for you. And I'm so proud that you are in the sisterhood with me and many millions of other women who have talked about the abuses and the humilities and the indignities that have been heaped upon them. Congratulations on your success. I am thrilled for you. I am so humbled and so grateful that you came on the show to tell your story. I want to let everybody know where they can find your memoir, The Parrot's Perch. Would you please tell?
Yes. It is available at many independent bookstores and sellers. It's available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. And it can also be purchased through my website, which is www.theparrotsperch.com. And I'm pretty sure that there's a couple of other places out there, and I can't think of them at the moment. But if anybody would like to come to my website, you know, I can certainly direct them.
And if you want to learn more about Karen, please go to She Writes Press and take a look at, under authors, look up Karen Kelt's name. It's K-E-I-L-T. There's a little bit of information about her in the book. You'll be directed to her website and to her Facebook page. It is a stunning memoir that not only women should read, but everyone should read, because, you know, when you turn a blind eye, you are condoning bad behavior. Karen, I honor you as one of the sheroes of the day. Thank you so much for being here. I wish
you
a very long and happy and wonderful life, and congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Pam. I really appreciate what you do, too.
Thank you.
To help get things like this out into the world.
Oh.
And it's an honor to participate.
Oh, thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen who listened, I'm so glad you're here. If you want to go and re-listen to this podcast, you just go to your favorite podcast app or go to SoundCloud. You can find all the information on our website at www.authorsontheair.com. This is Karen Kelt, Survivor, Superwoman. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Mom and Dad. And I'll see you later. Good night, Karen.